Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and we are talking with our chairman of the Republican Party, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. And Steve, how are things going for you this week?
Well, we're doing well. We're still sheltering in place. It's like the one guy said, in New Mexico, the towns are so far apart. Sometimes you live out on a ranch. You live out 50, 75 miles out of town, you got a black belt in social distancing. So New Mexico, that's easier for us to do. But yes, we're still taking it serious and complying with the law.
I was curious on your thoughts of the governor's idea to quarantine people coming into the Sunport from out of state. She wants to have them do that voluntarily, but most of our cases are coming from people outside of New Mexico, outside of the country. What are your thoughts?
That's exactly what President Trump approached it the other way. He just said you can't leave New York. That quarantine that he put into place there. And the reason for it is in Florida, they were getting a lot of New Yorkers coming in and bringing the disease with them. So our governor is saying, look, we'll check you. I don't know that a quarantine is required unless people are tested positive. But the checking of symptoms, checking the temperature, and if you've got high temperatures, then go ahead and check other symptoms. But those things make sense because a lot of the spread of the disease is happening because people are traveling. You know, people wonder why Italy is so heavily infected in the northern part. That's the textile part of Italy. And as I understand, Chinese companies have been there for years operating the businesses, even owning the businesses, and maybe even up to 30% of the businesses owned by the Chinese. So what happened is that at the Lunar New Year in January, many of the Chinese went home. It's a holiday. They want to be with family. It's a major holiday. And so they went home. They brought back tremendous numbers of cases where they got infected while they were in China. Also, in relation to these businesses, there was a delegation that came from the Wuhan area right into that northern Italy area to conduct a conference. And so hundreds of people were brought in that January time period. That's when President Trump was starting to limit travel from China to the U.S. And the Italians literally were indignant that he would do it and called him racist over it. Well, now then you see the problems that the travel has caused there. And so the idea that we would somehow stop the spread of the disease into New Mexico from people coming from outside the state makes sense.
So if the governor does something that we agree with, we're certainly willing to say she did the right thing, even if she's not a Republican.
Yeah.
All right. So the House and the Senate passed a bill and the president signed it. This is supposed to help people who have been put out of work because the businesses they work for were told by the government to close, or they own a business that was told by the government to close because of the danger of this virus. It's supposed to help big business, small business, and even individual Americans. So please tell us about it.
Let's talk about the process by which Republicans basically were forced into accepting a lot of the Democrat provisions. So you have to understand the Senate. Number one, in the Senate, any single person can threaten to filibuster a bill, and that filibuster then has to take 60 votes to overcome it. It takes a combination of Republicans and Democrats both to overcome the filibuster. So the Republicans had come to agreement last week, or actually the week before, with Democrat senators, including Chuck Schumer, and they all had agreed on a pretty clean bill that was going to move. Nancy Pelosi came back from California, got involved in the discussions with Chuck Schumer, and insisted that they not let that clean bill go through. Otherwise, the Democrats in the House would have been in the position of having to say yes or no to that bill. What she wanted to do was hold the Republicans hostage to the process, and then she told Chuck Schumer that we can put all sorts of radical left agenda in there that we've been trying to get for years, is her point to the senators. And so that's what happened. So the filibuster was invoked, and the Republicans had three Republicans out, so they didn't have even a majority of senators in the chamber. Three were quarantined because of the coronavirus. So the process was used in literally Republicans were extorted during the process because of the absence of the three and then also the filibuster process. So Nancy Pelosi was then adding things in her bill that she was laying out from the House. But even before we talk about it. I still want to talk about Thomas Massie. He's a good friend of mine. He's from Kentucky, a guy that was an MIT scientist. He lives off the grid in Kentucky using his MIT engineering background to do that. And so at one point when he first got into politics, he ran for city council or county commission. The courthouse needed a boiler put in. He said, we can't afford a new one. So he went online, found a used one for $10,000, $12,000. Then the staff said, we don't have anybody on staff that knows how to put in something like this. And so Thomas Massie put on his coveralls, went down and installed the boiler, asking for the tools and things, and they would hand them to him, and he installed that. So then he ran for Congress. And in Congress, he has been one of the ones that's willing to stand up and hold the system accountable. So he said, wait, it is not right that we have this vote just by voice. That's what happens in the House. You can have a process that is called unanimous consent. So the chair says we're going to pass this bill with unanimous consent. If no one speaks up, then it is passed without a single vote being cast on the floor. And Thomas Massie said $2.2 trillion, we should at least come in and vote on this. And so he was on the floor the day that they asked, is there anyone who objects? And he objected. That then required for them to have at least 216 votes on the floor, which is a quorum in the House. And people were calling him all sorts of names, Republicans and Democrats alike. And they were saying that he would have blood on his hands for causing the congressman to come in and actually vote in the chamber. And his point was on Fox News, how arrogant is that? That the Congress requires truck drivers to expose themselves and go to work every day, delivering the food for the shelves of America. They require police officers and firemen to go to work every day, exposing themselves. And so he said, it is arrogant on the part of this institution to say that we're going to require doctors and firemen, police, truck drivers, whoever else that has to go to work, and they, the Congress, are too important to be required to go in and cast a vote. They did reach a quorum. They did overturn his appeal, but at least he stood up to the system and said, hey, we've got to rethink what we're doing here. Now then, the bill that was passed, the most egregious thing in it was that they stuck a pay raise for the House of Representatives in it. So they're making $174,000 now, and it is always kind of a wink and a nod when they vote for pay raises, and they'll stick it onto bills that have to pass like this one and hope that nobody notices. I never voted for a salary increase because I think that congressional representatives should not be there for the money, that we should be there for the principal. And $174,000 is a lot of money, and it is more than most Americans make and certainly most New Mexicans make. And so that was one of the egregious things in it. In the next segment, we're going to dig a little bit deeper into this bill that you're asking about. The Democrats definitely played the system where the rules of the institutions were used against the process and against the majority to drive items which should never have been in this bill. The only things that should have been in this bill should have been ones to help the economy recover from the coronavirus. We'll talk in the next segment how that did not happen. We've got Representative Alonzo Baldonado that is on the line with us today. We're going to have an in-depth look at the actual bill that passed. But fascinating times in the news business these days, Derek.
We will be back to talk about the pork that was pushed along with this bill in just a moment on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. I'm talking with the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. Let's continue our conversation on the coronavirus relief bill.
First of all, let's lay down the parameters that the Republicans sided with President Trump and said that we've got all these businesses shut down. They're going to be going bankrupt, and we need to solve that. We don't need small businesses across the country or major corporations, big industries going broke. And so they felt like the need to pass this bill, which is basically bailing out companies that are shut down because we're trying to keep the coronavirus in check and not becoming a worse problem than it is or will be. And so that's what the Republicans wanted. So they put 4 months where businesses can go to their bank and get a loan to pay the employee's salary, to pay the rent, to just pay the basic cost of doing business, and that loan will be forgiven during the four-month period, except the interest on it. And so that is very, very fair to the businesses. The second thing it did was realize that people are going to be running short of paychecks. They're out maybe more for health services because of their concern for the safety of their family. So every adult is going to get $1,200, including those on Social Security. So every adult, $1,200, that's $2,400 per couple. And then $500 for every child. Also, unemployment. There were 3.3 million people on unemployment last week, the largest ever in America's history. And so the unemployment benefits were where the Democrats really began to chip away. Instead of paying unemployment based on their pay, which has been done in the past, they put a mandatory $15 an hour unemployment pay into the bill, and that's on top of what the state pays. So let's say the state reimburses $2 or $3 toward what you would get when you're employed. Then if it's $3, then you add that to the 15 that is coming in from the federal government. So you're going to make $18 an hour for 40 hours a week as your unemployment pay. That was one thing that Republicans felt egregious. I think they were happy to pass and extend the unemployment benefits, but to make it to where companies in New Mexico are going to be paying quite a bit less than what unemployment pays is going to encourage some people just to drop off of work. Another egregious thing we mentioned in the last segment was the $25 million for a pay raise for the House of Representatives, and then $35 million for the Kennedy Center. Now, that maybe should be done, but it shouldn't be done in this bill, an $800 million endowment for the humanities and the arts. And again, that may be a noble cause, but it should not have been added onto this bill. There was an automatic visa extension for all foreign workers in there, which I think that the process is possible to continue to work the way it is. There was a bailout for the post office. The Democrats at one point had a nationwide $15 an hour minimum wage in it. You had mentioned previously, Derek, that ballot harvesting was put into this bill, and it's made legal. Ballot harvesting is when you send teams of door knockers around to collect ballots from people who typically don't vote. In any given election, only about 55% to 60% of the people vote. And so teams are going to go around getting the ballots from people who don't typically vote, and usually it's teams of Democrats. That's what happened in Phoenix, to where a Democrat senator won an election that should have been won by a Republican, Arizona being a very red state. So that ballot harvesting is now legal and is something that we worry about a lot. Same-day voter registration was put into this bill. That's something that the county clerks hate, because people can vote in one area of the state and then go across into another county and re-register on the same day and vote again. And so that encourages fraud in our elections. So those are all things that we felt like that should not have been in this bill. The president and the Republicans were first to vote on it, because the Democrats, again, were using the process, in my opinion, to harm the nation. But that's basically what that bill, the $2.2 trillion stimulus bill, looks like.
So does that mean the Republicans are going to have to do the same thing as the Democrats now and go door to door and get buses and get Republicans on those buses on Election Day and send them over to register and vote the same day? I mean, if you can't beat them, join them. Is that the attitude we're going to have to take?
Well, that's still to be seen. But obviously, there are going to be a lot of people trying to figure out how to do that. Again, the registration in this state heavily favors Democrats. And so if it comes down to knocking doors to get votes, then that takes away the importance of your self-motivation. The people who don't vote generally don't pay attention. And so that is where the problem is going to arise. We'll have elections that are based less on what the performance of the people in office has been, and it'll be based more on registration. And so I think that it's not good for America that those things were included in the bill.
Well, it's an example would be generally people here illegally being brought to vote and register the same day would not likely vote for Republicans. So we could have results of an election change a week after Election Day, assuming our Secretary of States are honest and when they vet the votes, find out some people weren't eligible to vote.
A lot of problems are beginning to manifest themselves across the nation because the way the progressives are willing to fudge at the ballot box and fudge the process to where they can even harvest more vote. So again, very, very unproductive for the Republican, for the way that it was founded.
What pork did the Republicans put in this coronavirus $2.2 trillion bill?
Well, I don't see that they put any pork into it. In other words, they didn't go and try to get pet projects of theirs put in. What they did was they put in provisions which will help rescue businesses across America. They put in provisions that will make it possible for people to pay their rent, for the businesses to stay open and to offer jobs through this devastating downturn. So that's what Republicans were after. They got it, but at a very high price from the Democrats who are willing to basically extort them. We're running a little bit long on time, but before we go, just a very key thing happened this last week. I've been involved with a couple of cases, and as I was running for governor in 2018, came across a lot of the foster families, and the CYFD has been egregious in the way that it handles our kids. Many times, kids will be abused, either sexually abused or some other kind of abuse, in the home of their birth parents. And so they're removed out of that home and put with foster families. And then the CYFD and its process will allow them to be visited by those same parents who were abusing them before. And maybe there have been criminal convictions and they're still allowed to visit. So these foster families have petitioned the Supreme Court of the state of New Mexico, and on March the 27th, order number 208500-009, basically Judy Nakamura, the Republican who is the Chief Justice of our Supreme Court, slammed the door on that process of CYFD allowing families who have abused their kids, or maybe they've been convicted of criminal activity, and she has said you can no longer make these kids visit those parents. The CYFD claims that it was all a mistake, that they were just trying to reunite families. The truth is that they were putting kids in very grave danger. And thanks to Chief Justice Judy Nakamura, just basically said that if you commit crimes, if you abuse your kids, then you're not going to automatically get this in-person visitation. Very important piece of the puzzle for kids that have been removed from their parents. And thanks again to the Supreme Court and especially to Chief Justice Judith Nakamura.
Coming up in our next segment, we'll be talking with Alonzo Baldonado, our representative from Valencia County on Inside New Mexico.
On behalf of the New Mexico Department of Health, take COVID-19 precautions. Wash your hands frequently for 20 seconds. Don't touch your face. Use a tissue or your elbow to catch your sneeze or cough. Avoid large gatherings and close contact with sick people, especially if you are elderly or high risk. If you have a cough, fever, or shortness of breath, stay home from work or school. Do not go to the ER or doctor's office without first calling the coronavirus hotline. And avoid all unnecessary out-of-state travel. Help prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. I am talking with the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce, and we are going to electronically hop down to the Los Lunas area with, as promised, our representative, Alonzo Baldonado. Steve?
Well, Representative Alonzo Baldonado has been a longtime friend. I watched as he got into the political arena representing Valencia County. Thank you for being with us today. Tell our listeners just a little bit about your background, what you did before politics and what you still do, and then your decisions to get into politics. So let's just lead away there.
Thanks for having me on today, Steve. I decided to run for office just after the 2008 election when you ran for the Senate seat and Heather Wilson had given up the House seat, and we turned from three Republicans in our congressional delegation to five Democrats overnight, and Barack Obama was the president. So I felt like it was that time for me to step up. I kept thinking it was someone else's opportunity or someone else's duty to do that. But lo and behold, I accepted the challenge, ran for the State House, won in 2010, started serving 2011, and have been serving since. I had the privilege of serving as the only Republican majority whip in 2014-15 when we had that majority for 2 years. And I sell real estate for a living and rent and manage rental properties, so that's a steady gig for us, but it allows me to have the time to pour into the House representative seat and do all the things that I've got to do there. As your listeners are out there paying attention, we're always looking for people to run for office. In fact, you know, the party and other people this year did a great job recruiting people to run for office, and so we're excited to see what we can do with over 100 people filed, if I'm not mistaken.
We've got 113 filed, and it looks like that we're going to get 110 or 12 on the ballot for 101 districts. So what issues do you find critical to you when you began service, and then what issues have you seen that have dominated your time after you got into your position as a representative?
You know, Steve, when I started, I had a fairly young family, and so education was a big deal for me and for, you know, what we were looking at. Of course, I'm a pro-life member, and that was always a big issue for me, and pro-Second Amendment issues. So the whole time I've been there, I've served on the Education Committee. I've become the longest-serving Republican on the Education Committee now. And I don't have a background in education. I have a background in business and real estate, that nature. But I feel like it brings a really good change of pace for the folks that are in the trenches. Most of the folks that serve on that Education Committee are in some way, shape, or form involved in the education business.
So you're the longest serving Republican on the Education Committee.
Correct.
People are frustrated with our education system in New Mexico. Why is it not working? What should we be doing different?
For my first 8 years, it was under the Susana Martinez administration. Secretary Scandera and then later Secretary Buskowski led the education department. And it was unfortunate to watch, Steve, because what we would see is these initiatives to reform education, to change what we've been doing. We were 50th or 49th when I started. We're still 50th or 49th. But to the Martinez credit, you know, administration's credit, they tried to change the way we looked at things, the A through F school grading issue of not letting kids promote from third to fourth grade if they can't read, things of those things. But the union stronghold, there's two very key unions here in New Mexico, the AFT and the NEA, which are the education-related unions, push back constantly and are very powerful because most teachers belong to NEA or AFT throughout the state. And so it's very frustrating to watch folks sit there and critique and take shots at Scandera or Ruskowski as they led the department. Yet the second that Lujan Grisham gets in, she hires the homegrown local secretary that had come from New Mexico and let the gal run for 6 months, fires her, and then brings another secretary from out of state.
So my observation is that the unions basically run education and they ruin education in New Mexico. Is that too harsh a statement?
Well, I mean, they serve a purpose, Steve. You know, I mean, there's some great initiatives. I mean, I've had bills that I've run where the union gets behind it. Lo and behold, they're on my team at that particular moment. But the frustrating piece is that they set this course at the beginning of the year or whatever it may be, and it doesn't change much from year to year. And they put their initiatives out there, and it's our way or the highway. And that's frustrating because when you have fresh ideas come in, you have someone who cares for the kids. I mean, alongside Secretary Scandera for 6 years, I worked close with her and her department. These people love the kids. They want to see the kids succeed. We all want to see the education system get better. But it was just very frustrating because by the time you had this aggressive bill that would reform things, by the time that it gets passed, it's so watered down that it does nothing. And you've seen that in your career with legislation, is you take the word and or, and you change them around, or you take shall and may and switch those two around, and you end up with this sort of watered down version that doesn't really have any teeth. And so that's the frustrating piece.
Teachers tell me they spend 60% of their day in discipline. And my point is, how can we compete with China with our kids that are coming out of the public education system if 60% of the day is trying to get people to sit down and shut up? I just think
we take our kids, Steve, and we educate them. We make such a big deal. In fact, this last legislative session, the governor pushed the Opportunity Scholarship Initiative basically to pay for every kid's education, which some folks will say that's a great idea. Some have their reservations. I'm one that has reservations, but we educate these kids, and then lo and behold, they graduate and they're gone. They leave. They go to Denver. They go to somewhere in Texas or wherever it may be, some other part of the country, because there's job opportunities and they can be more successful where they end up. And yet, I asked the question during Education Committee when we heard that Opportunity Scholarship bill, and I said, where in this bill does this require this kid we've just educated to stay in New Mexico, or do we have job growth opportunities written within this bill, or how does this mesh with the economic development arm of our government to help create jobs here in New Mexico? And I heard nothing from the bill sponsors because there was nothing in there that did that.
Representative Baldonado, again, I saw a lot of things in the last session that just worried me as just a citizen, not as a policy person, not as a chairman of a party, but just as a regular citizen. What were your impressions from the efforts on behalf of the progressives during this last legislative session?
Steve, I think the biggest thing that I walked away with and was frustrated with was the size of the budget. The 8 years under Martinez that I served, we went from a $5.9 billion budget to a $6.3 billion budget. And then dramatically, the first year of Lujan Grisham, that budget went to $7.1 billion. And then the following year, $7.7 billion. And as we all know right now, with oil prices taking a plunge, not only because of this COVID-19 crisis, but also because of what's going on with OPEC and Russia and Saudi Arabia, but as those numbers come down, and you know this better than most, coming from oil country, that's a dramatic impact on our budget. The far left and the way that they were spending this money, it was just embarrassing to me to sit back and say, you know, guys, we could do one-off projects with this. We can do infrastructure. We can do bridges and roads and water projects and things of that nature. But the tendency for the party in charge was to put that money into reoccurring projects, reoccurring budgets. The push for gun control, the Second Amendment right that has been impacted in the state, this red flag bill that passed. I'm hopeful that we see a lawsuit over this thing at some point and that the courts can sort of put a damper on that thing. But basically, we passed a bill and the governor signed that will allow a police authority or an agency to confiscate firearms without any bit of due process for this individual that may be accused of something. That's frustrating. And so hopefully that invigorates and ignites the not only the Republican base, Steve, because you know as well as I do, you know, my district runs about 31-32% Republican, 33 upwards of 40-45 of Democrats, and then the balance is independent or declined the state, as we call them in our state here. I've always told folks I've never won because of Republicans. I've won because they've supported me and have been my base, but I've won because Democrats cross over and vote for me.
As we wrap up the show today, again, I want to say a big thank you to Representative Alonzo Baldonado from Valencia County.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Steve Pierce. And if you are liking what you're hearing on this program, you want to get more involved with the Republican Party of New Mexico, go to the website at www.gopnm.org. The party also has a Facebook page and a Twitter account. The handle is @NewMexicoGOP. The Republican Party is always looking for volunteers to help them with their mission to win New Mexico for President Trump and to turn the roundhouse red. You can call party headquarters at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. I'm Derek Underhill. Thank you for listening. I'll look forward to visiting with you again next week right here on Inside New Mexico.